everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Proud to Work in Cannabis podcast. Really excited because today we dropped our annual jobs report. It's our 2024 edition. And join with me today, I have longtime writer in the cannabis space, Bruce Barcott. We've been working with Bruce for a really long time. And we also have Bo Whitney, who's the chief economist at Whitney Economics. The three of us have been working together since we did the job report last year. And so, guys, great to be with you this morning. How are you both doing?
Doing great.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here and good to be reporting some actual good news in the cannabis space after a couple of rough years.
Yeah, after a couple rough years, we do have some good news to share with you. In our jobs report, we see positive growth returning. So, Bruce, do you want to give us the high level, the mic drop of what we found this year in the jobs report?
Sure. After last year we had, it was rough times. A lot of companies had layoffs, in 2022 I'm talking about. And we saw a drop of about 10,000 jobs in the cannabis space for the first time ever. And this year, looking back at 2023 and early 2024, we found that the cannabis industry nationwide actually gained almost 23,000 new jobs. Legal cannabis now supports 440,445 full-time equivalent jobs. That's as of early 2024. That total represents a little more than a 5% year-over-year increase in jobs, and that's the result of a national revenue increase of about 10%. So, all in all, good news. There's a lot of deeper questions we'll get into there. It's not great news for every state, but a number of states are leading the way in terms of our job opportunities right now.
And, you know, one of the things I always think about is that when we started Vanks, there was less than 50,000 full-time jobs. And so today, for there to be 440,000 full-time U.S. jobs, of course, we all want it to be going faster, but to add 23,000 new jobs, especially when the market is so hard and there's so many regulatory headwinds and just headwinds in general to be adding jobs, I was really excited about it. You know, Bo, as our data guy, as you were going through this and going through this report and putting it together, what surprised you most, just at a macro level before we get into some of the nitty-gritty on what happened on each state level?
Well, what I saw is that the market is extremely resilient. I mean, there were a lot of headwinds post-COVID. There was economic changes. There were higher interest rates making your financial costs higher. There was a change in consumer behavior due to inflation. So they weren't spending quite as much at the register. And so despite all these headwinds, there was an extremely resilient industry. And although there's kind of the tale of two or the tale of three markets, a lot of that growth came in those markets where they had already established their market and were just growing it, or were just introducing cannabis to the adult use population.
When we think about the states that added the most jobs, just to give some folks some perspective here. So the state that added the most jobs was Michigan. Michigan added 11,341 jobs, bringing their total jobs up to 46,746. The second state that added the most jobs was Missouri, adding over 10,000 jobs. And the third state that added the most jobs was New Jersey, adding over 4,000 new jobs. What is your take on that, the Michigan, Missouri, New Jersey? You know, I think Missouri and New Jersey totally made sense to me, but Michigan has been a market that has been growing for a while and jobs have been growing for a while. So I'm really curious on your read on the top three.
Let me jump in here and give a shout out to Michigan. We have watched Michigan grow just year over year in surprising ways. It's incredible. And also, you know, we lost a real pioneer this week. John Sinclair passed away, and he was a stalwart Michigander, and one of the reasons we have legal cannabis today. And, you know, to look back over the years and see that, you know, John was famously jailed in the early 70s for one joint, and now to have 46,000 jobs tied to legal cannabis in the state of Michigan is incredible. Bo, can you speak a little bit about the reasons for that? I mean, we saw legalization across the border in Ohio, and I'm sure there were a few people visiting from across the way into Michigan, but I'll let you take it a little bit from there.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the job creation comes from the fact that there's licenses. There's a lot of businesses associated with this. And there's also been a pretty significant decrease in price. And as a result, consumers are extremely price sensitive. As a result of that decline in price, more and more people are participating legally in the legal market. In addition to that, you've got some folks coming from other states that are purchasing in Michigan, and Ohio is one of them. And so you've got this cannatourism going on. You've got lower prices with more legal participation, and so that's a recipe for increased business. And when you have increased business, you have to have more employees in order to support that business. So that's one of the key drivers in all that.
So one thought on that, and I want to talk about some of the states that we think are going to add a lot of jobs in 2024 before we get into some of the states that didn't add jobs. So one of the states that we think is going to add a lot of jobs is Ohio. And so one of my questions, as you were saying, the cannatourism, is that do you suspect as places like Ohio and the Michigan bordering areas begin to open up that we'll see a decline in sales in Michigan and as a result a decline in jobs? Or what's your take on that, on the cannatourism front with just the neighboring states like Ohio coming online?
Well, what you traditionally see in all that is that there is cannibalization of demand in the newly deploying states. And so that's good for the states like Ohio, right? And they already have an established medical program. It's very, very robust. And so by adding to that with the adult use population, you're going to need more businesses, more jobs, and the like. It will have a suppressive effect on the demand in Michigan. Now, this is common. When you saw the deployments in Arizona and New Mexico, you saw a sharp decline in the demand in Colorado. So while there may be some employment softness, it's not the end of the world. It's more the normalization. And so you may not see explosive exponential growth, but a normalization of the growth. And in that scenario, it's just kind of steady eddy. So I don't look to see a dramatic decline in employment, but more of a softening of the growth rates.
So as we're looking forward to 2024, we think that there's going to be four states where we're going to see the most increase in hiring. We just talked about Ohio, but we also expect that to happen in New York, New Jersey, and Maryland. Bruce, do you want to talk about why we believe this is going to happen in these four states? So again, folks, Ohio, New York, New Jersey, and Maryland, this is where we see jobs coming in 2024.
Yeah, well, Ohio's the most obvious one with, you know, Ohio's got 12 million residents, and Bo has calculated that it's the seventh largest market in terms of its total potential market there in Ohio. It may capture a little bit, it may take a little time to capture that market, but Ohio's got a pretty strong medical marijuana infrastructure already. They've got 120 currently operating medical dispensaries, and those dispensaries will get the first licenses for adult use customers. So they're already, a number of them are already hiring additional staff to prepare for the opening. And I think more stores will be licensed in 2025, and they expect to open up to about 200 more stores in the next 2 or 3 years. Now, New York and New Jersey, I think we're looking for a little more moderate, steady growth there. New York has been famously slow in its rollout. Even the governor has recently sort of lit a fire under the cannabis agency there and said, you know, let's get going on these licenses and get some stores open here, because they're still being swamped by unlicensed smoke shops, especially in New York City. New Jersey, they expect, this is the regulatory commission there, they expect to go over $1 billion in annual sales in 2024, and that's about a 30% revenue growth. So that, I think we'll see that revenue growth drive the addition of a number of new jobs. And Bo, do you want to speak to those two states of Maryland?
Yeah, well, a lot of this is a function of more licenses. And Maryland just announced that they were increasing the number of licenses that they're going to deploy. And so if you have, 10 or 12, 15 employees per license, like in some states, then it's going to grow pretty significantly. So really good opportunities. And at the same time, these are relatively nascent markets. And well, with the exception of New York, they're kind of a special case. But in these nascent markets, it takes a little while for cannabis to be normalized in society. And then once it is, then you've got a greater comfort level of going into the retail outlets and purchasing cannabis legally.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the states that unfortunately lost jobs in 2023 and why. So we had California, they lost 4,975 jobs. Colorado lost 4,472, and Washington lost 3,305. And then some other states that also lost jobs, we saw Oklahoma, Oregon, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Arizona. These were states that, there's less jobs at the end of the year than there were at the beginning. Guys, what do we think about this? There's some patterns that we're certainly starting to see, and it's no surprise as somebody that's in the hiring business, seeing customers just close down in places like California, shut their doors altogether, and of course get down to skeleton crews. But let's talk about, why we think we saw jobs going away in these states.
Yeah, you could do a whole podcast on California and its struggles year after year. I found Colorado's job loss to be really interesting and surprising. It seems like a combination of a couple of things happening in Colorado. One, as Bo mentioned earlier, is the loss of canna tourism. Now that buying in a legal store is no longer such an amazing experience that few people can have the opportunity to enjoy. I think that Colorado's lost a little of that shine on its from its cannabis tourism, and the fact that New Mexico, its neighbor to the south, is not only legal but has a really robust adult use system and stores and everything. I think they lost a lot of traffic there. And then the second part of that is that the price of an ounce in Colorado has fallen 30% in the last 2 to 3 years, and that squeezes everybody's profit margin. Bo, you want to add a little on top of that? You've gone deeper into the numbers there on those states.
Yeah, a lot of this comes down to profitability, and cannabis businesses have been struggling. And at the same time they've been struggling, there's been a payment issue, like a delinquent accounts receivable issue. And we just published a report on this. There's $3.8 billion in delinquent payments outstanding. And so that's pretty significant. That's almost 2 months worth of total revenue in the entire legal market. So in that regards, you're not profitable, or if you are, it's challenging, and then you have this payment issue. At the same time, like in the case of California, it's extremely tough to grow that market because so many of the counties still have prohibitions in place. So they've kind of opted out, which is opting in to the illicit market. So in that sense, you don't have the growth, you have the profitability issues, you also have supply issues, oversupply and declining prices. So it's, and at the same time, you have the change in consumer behavior and higher input costs. And so your labor's going up, your power is going up. And so you have all these margin squeezes. So when there's a margin squeeze like that, meaning, greater costs, lower revenue, then you have to make some tough choices. And unfortunately, that's resulted in some layoffs, some firm closures, and people getting out of the market. And just to add to that, it's unfortunate when people do go out of business because as a result of the federal illegality, there's really no protection. There's no bankruptcy protection or anything like that. So when cannabis businesses go under, go out of business, then it can have a devastating effect on them from a personal wealth destruction perspective. So that it's even more devastating than just in typical industries in that regard.
I was reading your report on the delinquent payments, and I was thinking about it. When you looked at, you know, sales to the amount of delinquent payments, it's something like 15%, roughly. And I was just Googling just to see what, you know, in America, what's the average bad debt to sales ratio? And it was, you know, like less than a quarter point. It was like 0.16 or something. And so if a business had 15% bad debt, they would just go out of business. So it was just really staggering, your report around the delinquency. So I would definitely encourage everyone to take a look at it. I mean, it was really quite disturbing. You know, Colorado, Bruce, back to what you were talking about, we used to throw a career fair in Colorado Vangst, and it used to sell out instantly, right? Companies would come, they'd set up a booth, and they would be fighting over who was going to be the platinum sponsor. Would it be LiveWell or Native Roots? And they would have huge tents. They'd have five internal managers and people that wanted these jobs would be lining up around the block. And so anyway, it was always a great event. And we thought to ourselves last year, that event was always so fun. We, you know, had live music. We brought the community together. Let's do it again. We couldn't sell one booth, so we had to cancel it. But, you know, and for a minute I was like, what's wrong with our sales team? Why can't we sell a booth? And, you know, now it's pretty obvious why there was jobs were going away, not coming up. And so obviously for our career fairs, we need to be going to new markets. But it was just like an actual visual of the difference in, you know, we did these fairs in, you know, 17, 18, 19, virtually in 20. And now, you know, we tried again last year and it was just impossible. So, you know, what I'm wondering is, and again, we're now thinking into the future, like what happens in places like where I'm sitting right now, Colorado, because everyone I speak to here, it's like they basically tell me that they're just holding on for dear life and they don't know that they're going to be able to make it, and they're not hiring. If anything, that they're asking us to help their employees find other jobs. So I'm just curious, like, what has to happen to make this work? Because it kind of is concerning when you look into other states. You know, I think about a place like California. We spent so much time winning customers, placing people in jobs, and then you see year over year those jobs and businesses going away. Are we going to be sitting here having this conversation about Ohio, you know, in 5 years? So I just want to get your reads on what happens in these markets and how other markets avoid it.
Let me set you up here, Bo. Bo has some really interesting thoughts and observations on the role of regulators at this point in the maturation of cannabis markets, and the idea that it may be time for them to start doing a little bit more than ID checks at the door. Bo?
Yeah, what I've found is that while the markets evolved and the type of businesses have had to be very malleable through this very dynamic period pre-COVID, COVID, post-COVID, they've learned to adapt to the changes of environment. And that's kind of the stereotypical nature of the industry as a whole. What the regulators have done, though, is that they've remained so transfixed on public safety, which is justified, but they haven't been monitoring the health of their licensees. And as a result, their policies have remained static while the market has changed pretty dramatically over the last 5 years. And as a result, they're too strict and they're not pro-business. And if they would look at the health and the balance of the health of the operators in addition to public safety, they would provide a greater, more open market so that they could thrive. A lot of the policies actually are increasing costs rather than decreasing them. And it's really negatively impacting the industry. So while there's a lot of talk about federal policy, banking, interstate commerce, tax reform, and the like, there's also things that could be done, very simple things to at the state level as well, you know, such as like on this delinquent payment issue. I mean, they could mandate a certain time period in which people have to clear their books or clear their accounts. In some states like Washington, they're already doing this. In other states, they're entertaining this from a legislative and from a regulatory perspective. But there needs to be something fundamentally changed right now, because there may not be the same industry in 5 years. And a lot of the folks that are just hanging on now are kind of counting on federal reform, but they really need immediate state by state reform as well.
I think one of the things, Carson, that we're also learning, that we're also learning is to keep a closer watch on the balance between supply and demand. And that goes back to the issuance of licenses. Essentially, you know, striking a better balance between your growers and your retailers. You know, you can grow as much as you want, but if there aren't those access points, there aren't those stores available for consumers to purchase, you're going to have an oversupply that drives prices down and drives folks out of business. So I think especially, you know, when you're talking about states like Ohio and also, you know, Minnesota coming online in the next couple of years, and Virginia eventually, hopefully, really, I think now is the time to take a hard look at the experience of other states and really, really, really watch what we're doing with grow licenses in those new states.
Yeah, you know, I've been helping some state regulators to right-size their license structure. And so we've been going in, doing an analysis of their market, the amount of supply, the capacity utilization. That's on the supply side. Then looking at the demand, and then right-sizing the number of retailers, right-sizing the number of cultivators, right-sizing the number of processing licenses. And by doing so, it strikes a balance so that the operators are set up for success rather than becoming oversupplied and then economically constrained. So the right-sizing exercise is starting to take shape now, but not all states are doing it. Just very few are right now. But we're hoping that we can support more states in this process.
Well, we're coming up on time here, so the final question I'll ask, I'm sure we'll be together between now and when we publish our 2025 jobs report. But what's your personal prediction? We're sitting here and we're talking about 2025. Do we have a 10% job increase? Do we have a minus 5% job increase? Let's throw them out there and we'll make this an annual bet. So,
well, what do you got?
What do you got, Bo?
Well, I think that there'll be an increase in demand for labor for sure. You can't help not but have an increase because the market is forecasted to grow. We're forecasting pretty significant growth, maybe not necessarily just this year, but in 2025 and 2026 when market conditions are more favorable, lower interest rates, greater macroeconomic type of things that are impacting the broader economy, but also are very, very correlated to the success in the cannabis market. So we're seeing predictions on increased employment, increased revenues, and a lot of this is coming in these new markets. So there's a lot of optimism, and we're pretty bullish right now on the cannabis industry as a whole and in the adult use and medical markets in specifics.
Bruce, what do you think?
Let's go Ohio is what I think. And just a peek around the corner, Minnesota is coming online soon, and they will need nearly 400 new stores. I'm looking at Virginia and hoping they can figure things out eventually. It's legal there, but the governor just vetoed a package that would open some stores. So they'll be kicking it down the road, but Ohio's got our hopes high, and we're looking at Minnesota coming online after that. So very exciting times.
You know, and one thing to note is There's the Supreme Court in Florida just approved the adult use legalization to go on the ballot. And don't underestimate the impact of that, because if in Florida the voters have to approve it by a 60% support, and if they can get to that, it not only has a fundamental change in the way that the Floridian market works, but it could also have sweeping impacts on the southern states in terms of their reform movements as well. So there's little, while Ohio, I totally agree, Minnesota, there's also stuff going on in the south that could raise a lot of eyebrows in a very positive way for future opportunities in the cannabis space.
And also from where I'm sitting, I'm optimistic. I'm very optimistic on the state front. Even from where we are, we're seeing a big increase in demand in New Jersey and New York right now. A lot of jobs are there and available. But I'm also looking forward to something that you talked about, Bo, just around the overall profitability of companies, including in more mature markets. If we could see something on the federal level like rescheduling and people could get some relief on 280E to allow some cash flow to come into their business, I think that could be optimistic for companies in the more mature markets like the Colorados. So I'm really optimistic about the new markets, and I think that's almost a guarantee, right? Ohio has to create jobs. There's businesses that go from zero to one. Of course you need employees. So I'm optimistic there, but I'm also cautiously optimistic on what will happen with something at the federal level to bring some cash flow back into businesses in more mature markets. So my bet is that we're sitting here with at least a 10% year-over-year job growth as we're doing the 2025 jobs report. Let's hope that we're right. And I think that, I don't think we were this optimistic last year. I think if we went back and we listened to our podcast last year, the three of us were a little down in the dumps, a little bit concerned. So I definitely think that we're turning the corner here.
Well, you only had anemic growth last year, and a lot of the, businesses and deployment of businesses was impacted by the higher interest rates and the higher cost of capital. And so I think we've turned that corner. And so people are talking more about interest rate cuts more so than interest rate increases. And so that can only be favorable for the cannabis industry. So I think we have turned a corner, and there's reason for optimism, throughout the country. Oh, and another thing is that there's reason for optimism internationally as well. I mean, Germany just announced their adult use legalization. It's a slow deployment, but, that too could have a sweeping impact on the way cannabis reform is viewed internationally. And Germany could have taken the leadership mantle away from the United States in driving this reform globally. So something to look out for and look and closely watch. It's a global marketplace, and so issues internationally can impact the domestic market here in the United States.
Absolutely. Well, as always, it's such a pleasure to collaborate with you guys on this. I mean, it's for viewers listening, you might not know this, the federal government does not count cannabis jobs. And so legitimately, Bo and Bruce have to go out and do it. So without us doing this, nobody would be doing it. So feeling really proud that we're the ones doing it. It's an incredibly important piece of work. Today, on Wednesday, I'm in D.C., and I'm going to meet with members of Congress. I have the jobs report printed out, and everybody that we meet with, I'm going to sit down and show them exactly what's going on with their state. We actually got cannabis designed stress balls, because you can only do a leave behind that costs $5 or less. And on the stress ball, we said, 440,000 U.S. American jobs on a cannabis leaf that we'll leave behind for each of the politicians with a cannabis stress ball. So again, incredible piece of work. So proud to do it with you guys. And people can go to Vanks.com, download the report, share it with your friends, share it with your employees, share it with your state and local politicians, share it with everybody. This industry creates jobs. It's going to create more jobs. And we need everyone's support in helping us get to the million jobs in the U.S. Mark. So thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. Thanks, Carson. Always fun to work with you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey friends, I'm Brannon.
And I'm Saba.
And we are your host of the Cannabis Hangout Podcast, an educational platform to connect with the cannabis community and share personal stories while breaking the stigma of marijuana.
Join us every Sunday at 7 p.m. to gain valuable insight with different perspectives from industry leaders, growers, and medical marijuana patients.
This is a place to learn so much from different angles in the cannabis industry. So tune in
while we break it all down.